Tom Woods Show, episode 2139.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, the Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, if you've decided it's best not to have your kids educated by people who have declared war on you, then consider the self-taught Ron Paul curriculum. Instructors like me will give your kids an unfair advantage and an education you and I could only have dreamed of. But make sure you join through my link, because only there do you get my $160 worth of free bonuses. My link is ronpaulhomeschool.com. Hello, everybody. It's Tom Woods, and today we're going to talk about Aristotle, and we're going to talk about what he had to say about what it means to live a good life, what it means to live as a human being ought to live. And I am drawing for this episode from my Western Civilization 1 course, Western Civilization to 1492 course that I created for the Ron Paul curriculum. So here's a sample of it, and you'll see that any adult can listen to this and not feel like your intelligence is being insulted. It's not for kids per se. It is aimed at a high school audience, but as you'll see, you're going to get plenty out of it. So here you go. I hope you enjoy this. I think it's of pretty good quality. So enjoy, and then afterward, if you would like the whole course, like if you'd like a whole bunch of audio files like this that teach you something that you know in your heart you need to know, but you don't know, I'll tell you how to get it. So here we go, and enjoy. Hi, everybody. It's Tom Woods, and we're going to study Aristotle's Ethics today. But before we do that, let's say a little bit about what we covered last time. Last time, we introduced the philosopher Aristotle, who lived from 384 to 322 BC, and we made note of the vast areas of study in which Aristotle engaged and made contributions. So we talked about logic, for example, where Aristotle was practically synonymous with logic, all for 2,000 years and more. If you were studying logic, it meant you were studying Aristotle, who developed many of the laws of logic, and even to this day, when there has been more of a diversity in the study of logic and different kinds of logic other than Aristotle's, a lot of professional philosophers say, you know what, Aristotle really had it right the first time. There has not been an improvement since Aristotle. But beyond that, we noted that he talked about ethics, as we'll talk today, talked about politics, talked about art and aesthetics, and he gave really the philosophical vocabulary to the West for a very long time by talking about the four causes, by introducing language like potency and act and substance and accident. And all these kinds of terms and concepts really became a part of the philosophical landscape all throughout the West and continue to inform philosophical thought today. We noted that he was aware of those who had come before him. He, in some ways, responded to Plato, responded to the pre-Socratics. He responded to, you'll recall, Parmenides, who said there is no change. There can't be any change because being can't come from not being or non-being. And so, for example, if you are tall, well, how could you become tall? Where did the tallness come from? It couldn't come from, you were originally not tall. But not tall can't give rise to tall, because not tall is nothing. Not tall is not being, and non-being can't give rise to anything. Now, if this doesn't make any sense to you, that's okay, but I'm just pointing out these are sorts of arguments that philosophers have had for a long time. And Aristotle's answer to this was that when you have somebody who's going from being not tall to being tall, it's not a condition of absolute non-being then giving rise to tallness. He says the person has the potential for tallness, and that potential is actualized by something else. So this water has the potential to be hot, whereas Parmenides would say, well, how could it become hot? Where'd the hotness come from? From not hot? It started cold, so it starts at not hot. How does it go from not hot to hot? Not hot is non-being. Non-being can't produce anything. But the point is the water is potentially hot, and with the aid of a fire or a high temperature of some kind from some source, its potential to be hot can be actualized. Now, you don't have to worry about the technical details of the Parmenides versus Aristotle argument. However, I do want you to remember the idea of potency and act, that something or we could call it potentiality and actuality. Sand on the beach, for example, has the potential to be a sandcastle,
but that potential has to be actualized by something outside it. So a person with a pail and shovel and devices of that sort, for example. It seems like this is not important. I assure you it is. And you'll see much later on in the course when we talk about Thomas Aquinas, just how much he can draw from what seems to be such a simple idea. So we talked an awful lot about Aristotle and all his varying interests. And we noted that also he was interested in the sciences of various kinds. He was interested in animals and all kinds of questions like that. He gathered an enormous amount of data, studied and classified it. He truly is, as Aquinas would later call him, the philosopher in the West. So today we're going to talk about Aristotle's ethics. Now, Aristotle wrote two ethical treatises. One is the Nicomachean Ethics, and one is the Eudemian Ethics. It's the Nicomachean Ethics that most people, most scholars, believe to be the one that's more worth studying. His father was named Nicomachus, and his son was also named Nicomachus, and the book is dedicated to his son, hence the title, we assume. Now, if you are expecting in a book on ethics by Aristotle to find out rules according to which you should live your life, like I should do this, do's and don'ts, do this, don't do that, then you'll be an ethical person, you're going to be in for a surprise. That is, forget it. That is not what Aristotle is driving at. What he really is driving at in this book is trying to get to the bottom of what is the best life? How should a human being live? And we're going to try to answer that question in this lesson using Aristotle's insights. Aristotle begins with this. He says, when we act, we are striving for a good. We wouldn't act if we didn't think we were going to bring about a better outcome than we would have had without acting. So when he talks about acting, he's not talking about reflexes. He's not talking about flinching because you think someone's going to hit you. That's not a conscious decision. When he's talking about action, he's talking about a conscious decision that you make. Those decisions are always made with some end. And when we say end in philosophy, we mean goal, some goal in mind. And what people are striving for is some good. And some of these goods are what we would call instrumental goods. They're goods that we want so that we can get other goods. So, for example, let's suppose you saw that I was taking my car to be repaired. And you might ask me, why are you taking your car to be repaired? Well, the answer is because I need to get to work. And I need a functioning car to get to work. So you can see that the car is an instrumental good. What I really want is to get to work. The car is the instrument by which I get to work. But then you might ask me, well, why do you want to go to work? And then I may say, well, because I need to earn money. And then you would say, well, why do you want to earn money? And I would say, because I want to buy things. Well, why do you want to buy things? And so you notice that every time I describe a good that I'm striving for, you can always come back with the 2 or 3 year old's answer, well, why? Why did you do this? Why did you do that? Why did you do this? Why did you do that? And Aristotle's view is that this can't go on forever. I need to get my car fixed so I can go to work, so I can earn money, so I can buy food, so I can eat, et cetera, et cetera. He thinks that ultimately there has to be a final good, an ultimate good, beyond which no further questioning would be necessary or would make sense. So if I say I'm working to earn money, that doesn't fully answer what I'm ultimately after, because money itself, unless I want to roll around in it, doesn't do me any good. It's what the money can buy me that I'm after. So a lot of times when we're talking about the things that we want to do, we're talking about things that yield us something else that we want, that then yield us something else that we want. But what are we aiming for at last? Where's this all ending up? Because if we didn't have some ultimate goal in mind, some ultimate purpose in mind, then we wouldn't bother getting a job. We wouldn't worry about earning money. We wouldn't worry about getting our car fixed if we weren't all aiming at something. Well, what are we aiming at? Well, we're not aiming exclusively at getting the car fixed or getting to work or getting the money. There's something above all this. What is it? And Aristotle comes to the conclusion that there is such an ultimate end, an ultimate goal of human beings, and it's happiness. So if I were to say to you, if you were to keep asking me, why did you do this? And I would say, to accomplish this. And you would say, well, then why did you want to accomplish this? If I finally said to you, in order to be happy, you wouldn't come back at me and say, well, why do you want to be happy? That would be a dumb question. You would say, oh. So that's the ultimate end. Now, we'll get to in a minute, what does Aristotle mean by happiness? He doesn't mean by happiness what you and I might mean sometimes when we think of happiness, like my favorite sports team won today, and I have the day off, and I'm going to a concert later with my wife, and the sun is shining, and the weather is really pleasant, and I'm just so happy. Aristotle's talking about something on a whole different level from that. But the point is that from Aristotle's point of view, happiness is that ultimate end. All these other goods that we're seeking after are instrumental goods on our way to happiness. Now, the Greek word that Aristotle uses is the word eudaimonia. And eudaimonia really implies something beyond happiness in the sort of, you know, I'm 10 years old and I'm jumping rope sort of sense. Eudaimonia implies a kind of a contentedness, a blessedness, a feeling of fulfillment that I am living my life the right way. I'm doing things right and I'm at peace with my life. That's really what eudaimonia is all about. Well, what other things might people think of as being keys to the good life? Like what other things might people mistake as being the ultimate good? Well, some people might say honor. I want to live a life in which I am honored by people. But Aristotle is not convinced that honor could really be the ultimate end that we're seeking. The reason we reject honor would be, number one, honor is out of our control. Whether we're honored or not doesn't depend on us. It depends on other people's state of mind with regard to us. And so we would think that the thing we're striving for would be sort of within our control. We can't control what other people think about us completely. But then also, would you want to be honored for something shameful that you did? Or would you really want to be honored for something that you didn't actually do, but people just think you did? Like, wouldn't you feel wrong being honored for that? So you see, it's not just honor, therefore, that we're striving after. What we're striving after is to live a life that's worthy of honor. We want to live a life that would make us deserving of the honor that people might bestow on us. So honor can't be the final goal we're shooting for. What about pleasure? Well, again, Aristotle won't say pleasure is evil, but just pleasure alone, he thinks, fails to live up to the human potential. That any old creature could live just for pleasure, but aren't human beings intended for something a little bit more than what a cow would live for? There's got to be something else. What about wealth? Well, we've already hinted at the problem with that, because wealth in itself is not the end. What do you want the wealth for? And then finally, what about virtue? But even here, although Aristotle very much encourages virtue, he says it's not ultimately virtue that we're aiming at. Because virtue is something, you could be virtuous by just sitting around all day. You're not doing anything wrong. You could be asleep and technically not be unvirtuous. But he's going to say that happiness is going to be virtuous activity, that virtue wants to express itself, wants to be active. And happiness, as we've said, is something that's sought for its own sake. All these other ends have something further in view. But once you get to happiness, that's your stopping point. And if you didn't have a stopping point, you wouldn't bother starting. So what's going to give us this happiness? What's going to give us this feeling? I don't even want to say feeling, because it's not a subjective state of mind. It's an objective fact about our lives, that we are in command of our lives. We are content in the direction of our lives. We are conducting ourselves in a way that's noble and befitting of a human being. Well, what is going to get us there? Well, Aristotle thinks that in order to understand how to reach our ultimate goal, we have to understand, first of all, what our purpose is. What are we for? What is a human being for? We know what a knife is for. A knife is to cut things. I know what an ice cube tray is for. It's to make ice cubes. I know what a vehicle, a conveyance is for. It's to get people and things from one place to another. So what's a human being for? Because we say that a knife is a good knife if it cuts well. A vehicle is a good vehicle if it efficiently gets you from one place to another. How do we say somebody is a good human being? Why do we say somebody's a good human being? Because he's doing what he was made for. The knife was made to cut. The ice cube tray was made to make ice cubes. But what was the human being made for? And what Aristotle is going to conclude is that to understand what the human being was made for, we have to discover what is it about human beings that's unique, that makes us different from all other creatures. This will help us get the answer to our question. And he says that reason, the ability to think, to act not just by instinct, but to act after reflecting on things, this is what makes us different from all other creatures. And because this is the unique feature human beings have, if we're going to live a life where we live up to our potential and we are living a life that will yield us eudaimonia, we must actualize all our great potentialities as human beings, but especially our reasoning ability. We must live according to reason. We must engage in rational activity. That is our ultimate goal. That's how we get toward eudaimonia.
Hey everybody, a quick message from your old friend Woods here. You know we live in a society where everything is political. The brand of ketchup you use, the razors you shave with, whatever it is, there's some political angle. And wouldn't it be nice to live in a world that's not political, where your razor company doesn't tell you how to live and your beverage companies don't try to propagandize you? Well, here's a great way to move away from companies that hate you and from unhealthy sugary drinks. And that is with Gold River Trading Company that produces the official tea of the Tom Woods Show. Cool yourself down with a pitcher of Gold River Trading Company's crisp and refreshing iced tea coming soon. Start your day with Gold River's invigorating 1776 American Breakfast Blend, or unwind with chamomile herbal tea. I myself am rather partial to the pumpkin spice tea. I know that's fashionable, but sometimes the fashions aren't wrong. They also have classic Earl Grey and other great varieties. Not only are these beverages delicious and much better for your health, but the company that makes them isn't going to lecture you about what a terrible person you are. So go and grab for yourself some of the official tea of the Tom Woods Show. Go to goldriverco.com and get 10% off when you use code, what do you think, Woods at checkout. So use code Woods when you go to goldriverco.com. Now go do this, by the way. Don't say, maybe someday. I don't know. Not very much of a priority for me. No. We have to support companies like this. We've got to put our money where our mouth is. So go to goldriverco.com and join Woods in enjoying this tea, taking 10% off when you use code Woods at checkout.
Well, there is one objection that's been raised to Aristotle on this. Aristotle's saying, what's unique about people makes them different from giraffes? Answer, they can think. They can reason. They can think about situations and decide what the best course of action is. A giraffe doesn't do that. Giraffe acts on instinct. So this is what differentiates us. But one criticism has been, well, what if it turned out that human beings were the only species that laughs? And the unique thing about human beings is that we laugh. Would that mean that the most fulfilling life would be a life in which we laugh all the time? But this really misses the mark. What Aristotle's really driving at is that reason and rational activity, activity in which we use our brains, is the characteristic feature of human beings. This is what defines us. This is what makes us realize that somebody else is a human being, is this exercise of reason. So what we want to do then is we want to engage in virtuous activity, because virtuous activity yields us real pleasure. Virtuous activity is activity by which we become accustomed to doing the right thing, by which doing the right thing becomes second nature to us. And we have many virtues waiting to be actualized in us: moral virtues, intellectual virtues. And the happy life is one in which all these virtues are perfected so that we live the best life possible. Now, unlike animals, let me go back to the slide a minute. Unlike animals, the point is you can think, you can reason, you can reflect, you can choose. You don't have to just act according to instinct or act according to pleasure. And so a life lived according to reason, in which your appetites and your passions are kept in subjection to your reason. You don't have various sorts of disorders where you're addicted to some pleasure, but you keep everything under control and you live a life that befits a human being and in which you make your decisions by reflection and with the help of your moral training. We'll get to that in a minute. This is the kind of life we ultimately should be striving for. Now, Aristotle goes beyond this at one point and says, really, the best life is the life of thought, of contemplation. In his Eudemian Ethics, he even says that the ideal life involves the worship and contemplation of God. Now, I think he realized that the vast majority of people were not going to find that to be an attainable goal, where they were going to be able to spend their lives just thinking about truth and goodness and beauty. So he says that, okay, but a perfectly good life worth striving for is one in which you are active in the world and in which you are actualizing all your potential for virtuous activity. So let's go on. Now, notice, by the way, when he's speaking this way, when he's saying that it's good for you to be virtuous, for example, in how you treat other people, his emphasis is not on it's good for that other person when you treat that person well. His emphasis is on you. It's good for you when you treat other people well. It's good for your whole inner constitution for you to treat that person well. So the emphasis is on the self, is on you. It's good for you to be virtuous. And a lot of times I think we think that virtue is kind of like a wet blanket. You know, like we'd like to just go out and have fun, but instead we have to be boring and virtuous. But Aristotle is saying, no, there's no division here. True virtue is really how we attain real happiness. Well, what are these things called virtues? It's a word we throw around quite a bit, and different authors mean different things by them. Virtue involves a habit of doing the right thing. Virtues are states of character that are conducive to happiness. The Greek word means goodnesses or excellences or perfections, which may capture the meaning a bit better. It is a steady, self-imposed obedience. You're the one imposing it on yourself. A steady, self-imposed obedience to a rule of action in the type of situations that recur in human life consistently, so that you know what the right thing to do is. Now, how do we become virtuous? How do we become virtuous people? And Aristotle is going to answer that by saying you become a virtuous person by doing virtuous things. But on the other hand, that may seem like he's reasoning in a circle. I become a virtuous person by doing virtuous things. Well, who would want to do virtuous things? A virtuous person. Well, how do I become a virtuous person so that I want to do virtuous things? Do virtuous things. Well, okay, well, how do we get started in this? And the way he breaks out of this circle of you have to become virtuous by doing virtuous things, at first we have to be disciplined into doing virtuous things. Like in our upbringings, our parents, for example, will tell us, do this, don't do that. And at first we do it not out of virtue, but just because we don't want to get spanked or punished or yelled at. But after a while, we become habituated to it. That is, we become accustomed to it. It becomes like second nature to us. Like, of course I'm going to do this. Of course I'm going to have the virtue of generosity. Of course I'm going to have the virtue of temperance because I've been trained in it. The more I do it, the more easily and readily I can do it in the future, the more easily it comes to me. So some acts create our good dispositions. Our early virtuous acts are what create in us the desire to continue in virtue. And so our later good acts flow from this training in virtue that we've got. This is why upbringing is so important to Aristotle, and living in a morally healthy society is so important. Because virtue is not something you can read about in a book and understand it intellectually and say, okay, now I know what courage is. I read about it in the book. No, it comes from doing it. And doing it trains you in it and helps sharpen your mind to understand, okay, in this circumstance, what ought I to do? So it's not a matter of being intellectually convinced of certain moral principles. That's not going to make you virtuous. It's the habits that you get from engaging in virtuous actions. This helps you to become a person who invariably knows what the right thing to do is. Now, Aristotle is not a relativist. He doesn't say what's right for you might be wrong for me, or what's wrong for you might be right for me. No, there is a right thing to do in each situation. There is a right thing to do. But usually the person himself, in many cases, is the only one who really knows what that right thing to do is. He has to look at all his circumstances and decide what he should do. For example, suppose it's a burning building and I happen to be an off-duty firefighter. Well, I should probably go in and rescue that person, that man who's up there, who's stuck in the burning building. But suppose I were a 93-year-old woman. Would it be a good idea for me to go up and try to rescue that man? I wouldn't know what I was doing. I have no training in this. I'd probably just get in the way. I'd cause more problems. So even though the general principle, you should help somebody who's in need or who's in danger, seems like a general principle, you just memorize it, read it in a book. In particular situations, you have to know what the right thing to do is based on your moral intuitions that come from your moral training, that come from a life lived according to virtue. And the more you engage in virtuous acts, the more you know what the right thing to do in a given situation is. Aristotle helps us to hone our understanding of virtue by narrowing it down and saying that virtues are a mean between extremes. And by mean, he means the middle point. Now, he doesn't mean that a virtue means to be virtuous, you have to be kind of like wishy-washy. That's not what he means. He's saying a virtue is the balance between two vices, two wrongs. So on the slide here, I have, for example, courage. Courage is the mean between rashness and cowardice. So cowardice would be there's a spider in the room, and so you move to Albuquerque. Or on the other hand, we could say rashness would be you say, hey, everybody, I bet you 15 cents that I can jump off the Empire State Building and survive. Like that, nobody would say that was courageous. So courage is the mean between these vices. Temperance is the mean between the vices of abstemiousness, that is depriving yourself too much of things, and gluttony, that is overindulging. The virtuous person engages in and cultivates within himself his potential for temperance. Generosity. So prodigality is just given everybody everything, and this sometimes spoils people. That's not a good thing. But illiberality is like Scrooge, and that's not good either. So the mean is generosity. Now, he makes an exception. He says justice. Justice is not a mean between extremes, because there isn't any corresponding vice to being, let's say, too just. You've engaged in too much justice or something. We wouldn't say that. Now, Aristotle's ethical system avoids extremes. And here he demonstrates himself to be what he is sometimes called the philosopher of common sense. Sometimes you hear philosophers and they're saying that all pleasure should be shunned and all we have to do is philosophize and wealth. We know who needs wealth when you have philosophy. Aristotle doesn't buy any of this. Aristotle says that anybody who says that pleasure is all that life is about is wrong. But anybody who says that pleasure should be avoided is wrong. So again, it takes a completely commonsensical view. He says that there are some basic things that are necessary to happiness, or at the very least, it would be hard to attain happiness without them. So he says, yeah, I think you do need some wealth. I'm not going to say, well, you could be absolutely happy if you were starving to death. No, he's not going to say that. He's not going to say that if I were being tortured to death, well, this would be okay because I'd still have my virtue. Plato comes close to saying that, but Aristotle doesn't think that. That doesn't ring true to the human experience. Or you would need some degree of good looks or reputation and even friends. And here in books 8 and 9 of the Ethics, he talks about friendship. And there's one translator of the Ethics who says that chapters 8 and 9 seem to him like an interruption of the argument. But I actually think it's a beautiful flow of the argument that he talks about friendship. This was a common topic in the ancient world. And this really proves his point about happiness as virtuous activity. He shows that the satisfying relationships that virtuous people tend to have are the really mature friendships that are there for the taking. So he says there are three kinds of friendship. And again, the Greek word, it's not quite what we think of as friendship. It's more like relationships. There are friendships of utility. So I have a relationship with this person because it's useful to me. Like this person, you know, is a good handyman and I can do other things for that person. There are other friendships that are based on pleasure. You know, this guy's funny. I like being around funny people. That's it. But these are unstable kinds of friendship, Aristotle says, because if the utility goes away, if I don't need a handyman anymore, or if I just suddenly decide that this guy isn't so pleasant anymore and his jokes are stupid, then there go those friendships. The real lasting friendships are what he calls friendships of the good, friendships of virtue, friendships in which people really think of the other person and hold that person in as much esteem as they hold themselves. They truly seek what is best for one another. And this is something that a virtuous person can have. A virtuous person is able to have this type of friendship because having lived a life according to virtue or striving to do so, he is able to enter into mature relationships with other people and thereby build up other people in their striving toward virtue. Moreover, friendships give an opportunity for the virtuous person to practice the virtues. This is why friendship is such an important part of the virtuous life. How can I practice the virtue of generosity if I don't have any friends? How can I practice the virtue of courage if I have nobody to be courageous for? So again, notice the emphasis is on you. It's good for you that you should have friends to bestow goodness on, but it's secondary that you're bestowing goodness on them. It's really that's good for you. That's the emphasis in his ethics. Not that we don't care about other people. We do come to care about them very deeply, but his emphasis is always on perfecting yourself, and you can perfect yourself better with friends, because with friends, you can act the virtues. And friends also can reinforce the development of each other's character. Aristotle says, the friendship of decent people is decent and increases the more often they meet, and they seem to become still better from their activities and their mutual correction. So that's an overview of Aristotle's ethics. I hope you enjoyed that. And I think you'll also agree that there is something indeed quite noble and admirable in it. It doesn't necessarily tell you in every circumstance what to do. What it does help you to do is understand the circumstances in which you can become the kind of person who will know the right thing to do.
All right, everybody, if you'd like to get this whole course, because there is something like 180 of these in this course, then there are multiple ways to do that, and I've got them all listed at tomwoods.com/2139. The most straightforward way is to go to tomwoodshomeschool.com, and you can get the courses that I made for the Ron Paul curriculum a la carte without having to join the Ron Paul curriculum. You can also get them if you are a member of ronpaulhomeschool.com. You'll see those courses available in there, so you can get them there. But if you don't want to join that, you can just get them through tomwoodshomeschool.com. Also, if you are a gold member or above at my Supporting Listeners program, I give you this course as a bonus. So that's supportinglisteners.com. Or if you're a master member at mylibertyclassroom.com, you also get this course. So there are multiple ways to get it. They are all listed and linked at tomwoods.com/2139. Our old friend Germinal Van is going to join us once again on Monday. Talk to you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.